Good afternoon. You're listening to Curated, a weekly roundup of the who's who and the what's what in the arts and culture scene here in the Roaring Fork Valley. I'm Patrick Fort, Aspen Public Radio's arts and culture reporter. Each week, we'll bring you conversations and stories about notable happenings in our little slice of the world. Today on Curated, we speak with a Basalt teacher who's on his way to a Grammy.
I mean, one, just kind of surprised that that existed, and two, just super honored and humbled that somebody had the thought to do that, that they were, you know, moved enough to make that call or do whatever they had to do to nominate me.
We hear from author Saeed Jones.
His very simple aspiration is perhaps more than his body can hold. It's dangerous. And so we see it actually become a matter of peril.
And we get a tour of Basalt's latest restaurant.
7 months of snow, and then I need to be in a restaurant that is like dark again. I can't do it. A lot of window, a lot of lights. I'm the queen of lights, so I say I like lights.
All of that, plus our song of the week, and as always, the week in the arts. A quick rundown of the top things to see, hear, and experience this week in the Valley. That's all coming up on Curated from Aspen Public Radio News. Basalt Middle and High School band director Nick Lenio is on the way to being a Grammy winner. That's because a community member nominated him for the National Educator Award. He's one of nearly 300 finalists. I spoke to him about this honor last week. Nick Lenio, you're currently a quarter finalist for a Music Educator Award as part of the Grammy Awards. Can you first tell me about what the process of applying is like for this?
Yeah, so as far as I know, and I wasn't part of this, but I think a parent or a group of parents nominated me. You can just go online and nominate a music teacher. So I got nominated. I got a notification that I was nominated. Then I had to do an application. And after I submitted that application, and then maybe a month later or so, I got an email saying that based on my application, I had been selected as a quarter finalist. So it started as like 3,300 or something like that nominations, and now it's narrowed down to 290 quarter finalists.
I think even more so, it's probably even more impressive for someone to nominate you. Do you know, were you surprised when you heard that someone had done that?
Yeah, totally. I mean, mainly because I didn't really know that such an award existed. I didn't know that there was a Grammy for a music teacher. So, I mean, one, just kind of surprised that that existed. And two, just super honored and humbled that somebody had the thought to do that, that they were, you know, moved enough to make that call or do whatever they had to do to nominate me.
Now, winning this award, what would that be like for you?
I think it would be, a major honor and a point of pride for our whole music program here at Basalt, because it's the thing that makes a band program or any music program work is not just a teacher, it's energetic students, it's a supportive school, and more so a supportive community and parents. So I think that while the award's for a music educator, I think that it would be just a really, really great honor, an appropriate honor for our band program here at Basalt.
Is there anything that winning this award would allow you to do that maybe you couldn't do before? Or maybe even this being nominated or making it this far in the process?
Nothing like too specific I can think of that it really allows us to do that we couldn't do before, other than say that we're a Grammy nominated or a Grammy award winning band program, which I think just justifies and verifies things for people, because people know that name, they know the award, so it really means something. And the kids are excited too, because this isn't, as I said, it's not really me. I feel like it's about the whole picture.
Is there anything that you hope to be able to do or want to do or maybe dream of doing?
I really just want to perform more with my students. We have a new group called the Basalt Street Horns, where we're playing what we call social music, which is kind of crosses a lot of genres. So we play hip hop music, we play electronic dance music, we play old funk tunes, we play New Orleans style music. And we've been taking that more and more into the community. And I think that the award would maybe even create more excitement around that, that we could continue doing that and maybe take some trips. And we were asked to come play at Jazz Aspen Snowmass Labor Day Festival this year, so we're super pumped about that, and I think maybe it would open more doors for us.
So just kind of business as usual, but still looking forward.
Yeah, totally. Always just trying to provide more and more experiences that the students can have to put themselves out there, take risks. Performances, you know, especially that type of performance where we're not in a controlled, like, we're on stage and you're in the audience type of environment. Every performance is an adventure, and it's just great life lessons to go put yourself out there. Sometimes things work out really, really well. Sometimes you flop a little bit, but that's, you know, that's life. So it's great.
What does this happening say about the band program at Basalt?
Oh, I just think it's alive and well. I mean, we're constantly growing each year. I think in the past couple of years, I've averaged 88% recruitment from the fourth grade class into fifth grade band. There's just a lot of vitality and energy, and the kids are excited about music, and the community is excited that the kids are playing great music. So I think it's just a reflection of all that.
And do you think that, yeah, this nomination is, in a way, like a vindication, maybe, of all the work you do?
Yeah, I mean, it's not teaching music, especially. I teach fifth grade through 12th grade, so it's quite a range. I have over 250 students, you know, fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, and high school bands. And you can imagine that teaching middle school music isn't always like flowers and happy times. Sometimes it's difficult. So it's a nice reminder of the bigger picture, when you can zoom out and see that what we're really doing is I think having an effect on the community and a positive impact on the kids. It helps those smaller moments that can be difficult or stressful.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that being a band director or teaching music, do you think that gives you a special ability or maybe reach to help kids out who are in tough situations like you're talking about?
Oh, absolutely. It's you know, music is something, especially instrumental music, it's something that doesn't need words, and it's something that I think taps into a part of us that maybe we can't even reach with words. So it gives us an outlet to, I don't know, to quiet our voice, but still have a voice. So, you know, you have to listen to each other. You have to cooperate together. And I think those are important skills for everybody to learn. And it's just an expression.
Since you made it this far in the process, have any parents or students come up to you and talk to you about, you know, how they feel about all of this?
Oh, I mean, there's like the whole thing is a buzz. Like, parents are pumped. Kids are really psyched. I think because it's the Grammys, you know, if it was just like music teacher of the year, it might not mean so much because even to like fifth grade students, they know what the Grammys are. So, everyone is really kind of excited and proud, I think.
Are there any particular instances of things that someone said that touched you particularly?
I mean, I've probably been asked over 50 times by students if I can smuggle them to the Grammys in my suitcase if I win.
Was there a teacher maybe when you were younger that had a really serious impact on you in your music career?
I've had a lot. It's tough to say one, because I've had so many along the way, because I started playing in fifth grade, playing trombone and also playing guitar. So, I mean, everything from my older brother showing me how to play 12 bar blues and we would jam on guitar and bass to like, working with university conductors or directors, there's a lot, and I think that it's all collective, that when you have good teachers like that, that you can, I don't know, blossom or really grow and develop your voice.
All right. Nick Lenio, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
That was Nick Lenio, the band director of Basalt Middle and High Schools. He's currently under consideration for the National Educator Award. This week's guest for First Draft is Saeed Jones, the author of Prelude to Bruise. Jones's debut collection is primarily a narrative tale of a mythical black child called Boy. Prelude to Bruise takes place in a southern landscape full of gothic imagery and deals with racial bigotry, difficult father-son relationships, aggression, and homophobia. Jones spoke with First Draft host Mitzi Rapkin about the themes and images in his poems.
Prelude to Bruise is a very elemental book, and so fire and water and the natural environment are pretty important symbols, in part because I felt, you know, since I was grounding this narrative in the American South and in that particular cultural landscape, it was clear that the Bible and its stories and images would be an important text for the voices, you know, and so you know, Sodom and Gomorrah is referenced, or Isaac and Abraham. And obviously there's a lot of fire and water, both as an image of purity, of fluidity, of gender fluidity, of motherhood. In Toni Morrison's Noble Address, at one point she mentioned what it is to live at the edge of towns that cannot bear your company. And I'd been working on the book or the poems in the book for about 2 or 3 years, because I really just focused on just writing poems more so than trying to write a book initially. But as a narrative started kind of to come into focus, I thought about that phrase, at the edge of the town. And I had this image of a father and his son who live in, you know, a cabin just at the edge of town, which for me was both kind of where the intersection of magical realism happens, which happens throughout the book, where, you know, it's 1 foot on the ground and 1 foot, you know, in kind of the air. And I had this idea that the mother was gone. Either she had run away or she had passed away, but it was a very raw grief for the father and son. And so as the boy begins to, you know, go through the house and find, you know, his mother's beautiful evening gowns that she left behind, and he tries them on, part because he's exploring his own sexuality and identity, and partially because he misses his mother, and this is a way of engaging his grief. I figured that it would trigger his father's own grief. In my experience, grief often kind of lights up a lot of different emotions depending on someone's life. And so in the case of this narrative, you know, his rage and his fear comes out. And so that kind of created a narrative engine, if you will, that really kind of drove the rest of the experience of working on the book.
When you blend the emotional truths of your life with this fictional narrative to create your poetry, what is that process like?
I think when I'm writing a poem, I'm very, very focused on the line itself. And so for me, it's all about writing one line at a time. And I don't want to move on to even the next line or stanza until I feel like I've gotten to where I need to be. So for me, it's a very almost kind of microscopic writing process that I really enjoy. I know that might sound a bit painstaking, but for me, that's the pleasure that I get to think about language and image much more intensely than we would, you know, in regular conversation or storytelling. But I think what happens is that anything you write, even if you're writing in a very focused, microscopic level, like I was describing, all of your work has to pass through the lens of your life. And all of your obsessions and your preoccupations, whatever you're reading, you know, if you've gone to the museum recently, you know, the weather, the music, all of these things, I think, kind of trickle in. And so in many ways, I feel that I've been writing this book my entire life. When I look at it, I see, you know, the fruition of different memories and experiences, of relationships, of artistic appreciation, that then begin to kind of guide the emotions that I was examining while I worked on the book. Once I kind of accepted the freedom of, I don't need to worry about the facts in this poem, as long as I can pursue the truth, then I found that things kind of clicked into place.
There's a line in your poem, Last Call, that says, I've got more hunger than my body can hold. And I'm wondering if you walk around feeling like that.
I think we all do. I think, you know, for me, that's a very, it strikes me as a very American feeling, right? That's, you know, the more hunger, more ambition. I want more than the life I've been given seems to have room for. I think that's a really, it's not necessarily a great idea, but I think it's an influential idea in our culture. And so for me, I do think about that. I think we all often feel we want or aspire to more, that perhaps, you know, the metaphorical body that we're living within, you know, we're held back, you know, either because of oppression or circumstances or the consequences of other decisions we've made ourselves, you know. And so throughout the book, I mean, that kind of in some ways sums up Boy, right? He has an ambitious drive to live. And actually what he wants is very simple. He wants to live as who he is, and he wants to be able to love freely. So in some ways that is actually incredibly humble. But because of the cultural context he exists in, because he's young, he's isolated, friendship and mentorship is not a part of his life, because of homophobia and racism, his very simple aspiration is perhaps more than his body can hold. It's dangerous. And so we see it actually becomes a matter of peril over the course of the book.
That was author Saeed Jones, author of Prelude to Bruise. He spoke with First Draft host Mitzi Rapkin. To hear their full conversation, go online to aspenpublicradio.org. You're listening to Curated. From Aspen Public Radio, I'm Patrick Fort. Follow Aspen Public Radio on Twitter or Instagram, or like us on Facebook. You can also follow me on Twitter at Patrick B. Fort.
Though there were men before me that held you in their arms with a love so hot and getting hotter, you're setting off fire alarms. Though there were girls before you, I don't remember their names.
Basalt got another new restaurant last week. Market Street Kitchen is operated in the Element Hotel by Mawa McQueen, the owner of another Aspen restaurant. The new spot continues the discussion of development in the Mid-Valley. The main kitchen in Market Street Kitchen is pretty standard. Metal tables and sinks, an oven, a microwave. The dining room and a similar cooking area out front are bright and open, though, and that's how Mawa McQueen, the owner of the place, wants it.
7 months of snow, and then I need to be in a restaurant that is, like, dark again. I can't do it. A lot of window, a lot of light. I'm the queen of lights, so I say I like light.
Her new restaurant is different than her place in Aspen. First, it's open all day. Second, she says it adds a bit more diversity to Basalt.
You know, beside the Latino culture, there is other culture that we haven't tapped into. So I think we need to.
She calls herself a mover and a shaker, as development continues to be an issue throughout the valley And as Willits expands, she says residents' concerns about more building and growth don't worry her.
Like people say, no, Game of Thrones, my favorite show. Winter's coming. We're going to move and shake the soul. In a good way.
Good, because she's not interested in being political, she says. All she wants is a place for her and her husband, Daniel, to be creative, with things like chia seeds. Why? Because she likes them. McQueen says she feels less pressure on this restaurant for multiple reasons. One is because she feels like she's filling a void in what Basalt has to offer. Another is because the restaurant doesn't have her name on it.
But people keep calling it Market Street Mowers. So I'm like, now this is Market Street. So things from the market, whatever is in season, whatever float my boat, basically that's what you're going to get.
She wanted to open a place like Market Street Kitchen a few years ago, but the timing never worked out. And now that she's here, restaurant owners in the Mid-Valley have been coming to her with open arms. McQueen is still working out where she's sourcing all of the food from, but hopes to have that figured out soon. The Aspen Music Festival and School starts in just a few weeks, and faculty and staff are returning to their offices as construction at the Buxbaum campus wraps up. The $70 million overhaul will finally come to a close this summer after 4 years of work. All but two staff members will be returning to their offices at the campus on Castle Creek. Those two will stay at Harris Concert Hall. Administration, facility maintenance, and performance spaces were updated as part of the second phase of the project. The only work left is in the upper studio building. The construction is expected to be completed by the time students return to the campus in late June. Good afternoon. You're listening to Curated. I'm Patrick Fort. It's Memorial Day. June is right around the corner. And for this week's Song of the Week, we've picked June Hymn by the Decemberists.
Here's a hymn to welcome in the day, heralding a summer's early sway, and all the bulbs all coming in to begin. The thrush's bleeding battle with the wrens disrupts my reverie again. Pegging clothing on the line, training jasmine how to vine, up the arbor to your door and more. Standing on the landing with the war you shouldered all the night before. Once upon it, yellow bonnets garland all along. You were waking and day was breaking, a panoply of song. Summer comes to Springville Hill. A barony of ivy in the trees, expanding out its empire by degrees, and all the branches burst to blue in the boom. Heaven sent this cardinal maroon to decorate our living room. Once upon it, yellow bonnets, garland all along. And you were waking, and day was breaking, a panoply of song. And summer comes to Springville Hill. Years from now, when this old light isn't ambling anymore, will I bring myself to ride? I give my best to Springville Hill. Once upon it, the yellow bonnets garland all along. And you were waking, and day was breaking, a panoply of song. And summer comes to Springville Hill. Summer comes to Springville.
That was June Hymn by the Decemberists. It's Monday, May 30th, and this is The Week in the Arts, an abbreviated list of the upcoming events and happenings in the Valley. Carbondale's Marble Distilling Company starts to celebrate its first anniversary on Tuesday. The distillery will be screening The Big Lebowski and serving their drink, The Dude. Spring into Summer opens at the Aspen Chapel Gallery. The show features the watercolor paintings of 10 local artists. Wednesday, Aspen Film will be screening the film Louder Than Bombs. The movie stars Jesse Eisenberg and tells the story of the death of a famous photographer and how her family deals with her passing as they discover the details about the accident that took her life. The exhibition Out of the Box opens at the Red Brick Center for the Arts on Thursday. Ghostland Observatory plays at the Belly Up in Aspen on Friday. The electronic group uses elements of pop, rock, and blues and have played big festivals like Lollapalooza and Coachella. Richard Carter's new art show opens at the R2 Gallery in Carbondale. Mandalas Considered takes the traditional mandala and adds geometric shapes. Disney's Tarzan the Musical is being performed at the Wheeler Opera House on Saturday. The production is put on by Secret Identity Pictures, a production company based out of Glenwood Springs. It's the end of a touring run that took the show to Rifle and Grand Junction. For more on arts and culture in the Roaring Fork Valley or to list your event, go to aspenpublicradio.org. This is Curated, a weekly show dedicated to arts and culture. I'm Patrick Fort at the Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk. Curated is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.